Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Dead Frog Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Felix. Today is a very special day because one, we're covering Craig Ferguson. Two, we're talking to Patrick Lopez. And three, Allison Closser has returned.
Dun, dun, dun. I am here and I'm about to get into Craig Ferguson's biography and his beauty and his psychology. And Joe's going to love every bit of it.
Yeah. Just real quick, if you don't know what the podcast is about, it's about dissecting, analyzing, and overall, like, appreciating stand-up comedy and all of its nuances and technicalities. Allie's going to get into Craig Ferguson now.
Yes. So we all know Craig Ferguson from being the host of The Late Late Show from 2005 to 2014. But let's roll it on back. He, as we can tell, has an interesting accent. He's from Scotland. He grew up, as he called it, chubby and bullied, which is appropriate for a future stand-up comedian. He moved to the United States at 22. He did some construction. He was a bouncer. Then he moved back to Scotland. And while there, I did not know this, but he's got a background in music. He was in a punk band with Peter Capaldi, who, those of you might know, it was Doctor Who. And it was Peter who actually inspired Craig to try out the whole comedy thing. And Craig ended up doing a combo of like character work and stand up through a character he developed named by Peter Capaldi called Bing Hitler. Oh. And yes, and it was and that character he did a lot, and he was at the Edinburgh Festival's Fringe. And while there, he got spotted by an agent who from America who basically was like, hey man, come to the US. And he did. And after he was in the US, he got on the Drew Carey Show, where he was Drew's boss, Mr. Wick. And when that ended, when the Drew Carey Show ended, he wrote and starred in three films, directed one of them. And then he went on to the Late Late Show. And after that, he was the Celebrity Name Game host. And he's dabbled in, he's been doing VO since then. He's and yeah, he's just been kind of steadily working. So that is Craig Ferguson in a nutshell.
Oh, thank you. And with us today to talk about it is Patrick Lopez. Patrick Lopez is a former UCB-trained sketch writer and a touring stand-up comedian. You can actually catch him from August 9th to through the 22nd at Burbank's COVID-y festival.
He loves saying that.
And you should check out the dates that he'll be on at his website, patricklopezcomedy.com. Please welcome to the show, Patrick Lopez.
Hello, hello. Okay, up front, I did not name the festival. I hate that name. Just thought you guys should know up front.
Thank you so much for letting us know that. All you listeners out there, please know that.
I had nothing to do with that.
He had nothing. Patrick had nothing to do with it.
I can imagine, like, yeah, like, just a bunch of, and I can say this because I'm not on the festival or on the bill for this festival. I bet you there are a bunch of comics who are, like, telling, not a bunch of them, but several of them who are, like, telling their relatives and friends, like, hey, I'm going to be on this festival. And they're just, like, real quiet when they say COVID-y.
Oh, my gosh. Like, yeah. Even if it wasn't in poor taste because of COVID, it's, you know, the pun itself doesn't quite roll off the tongue in quite the proper way. COVID-y? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I appreciate a good pun, but it just, not a huge fan. Yeah. Not a huge fan.
As a booked comic on the fest, I think all I'm legally allowed to say is I'm just calling it Burbank Comedy Festival.
There you go.
It feels like, you know that it's in Burbank because of how divorced they are from the reality of the situation.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Absolutely, yes.
There has not been one coronavirus case in Burbank. That is very true. But there's
is that true?
No, it is not true. If that was true, my gosh, people would be flocking to Burbank from around the world as being the only place that never...
I will say I'm surprised that they decided to go online. I really did think they were going to try to push to do it like live. So that's what I think about Burbank.
Oh, yeah. It seems like they could have used one of their like five movie theaters to host this.
Yes, the AMC row, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, why are there so many AMCs in Burbank?
It is the question I ask every time I'm there, especially when I go do a show of Flappers. There are three right next to each other. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah,
I feel like each one gives you a different experience. Right?
I don't need different experiences. I just need a place to watch a movie. That's it.
There's one where you take your family, right? And that's the big one. The big one. Cold Stone and Chipotle.
With those giant ass stairs, yeah.
Then, right.
There's one where you take your friends because you don't want to be too romantic, and that's the one in the mall.
Yes, that's totally that's totally good friend, we're not in LA, we're just out of nowhere just going to the mall to see a movie. Yes.
And then the third one is that's where you're having an affair. It's so out of the public eye that you're
I've never been to that one.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
I feel like, why did you feel compelled to say that out loud?
I've never been to the third AMC. I'm not recording at home right now.
I mean, I guess that's true, because if you're looking for a cheating spouse per se, and you go to two AMCs, you're not gonna go, let's go to the third one. You're gonna be like, he wasn't at the first two, let's move on.
Exactly.
Well,
he's at Islands.
There you go.
Oh yeah, those are the three options. Or the Fuddruckers.
Yeah, true. That's where I take all my mistresses, is to the Fuddruckers.
Man, yeah,
that's when you spoil them, right?
Yeah, that's big bucks right there.
Ooh.
Excellent. So Patrick, dude, where'd you grow up?
I grew up on the West Coast. That's the simple answer. The more complex answer is I was born in Fullerton. I moved to Vegas when I was 5 or 6. Then I moved to Southern Utah when I was 12. I went to college in Arizona, and then I moved back here five years ago now. Yeah, 5 years ago.
Damn, you're really all about the Western expansion of the United States.
Man.
Yep.
I was just in Southern Utah for the first time a few weeks ago. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful, as long as you're only there for a couple of weeks and not, your formative years of your life.
Yeah, where'd you grow up? Where specifically?
It is a small town called Kanab, Utah.
Okay, what side of the state is that?
It's Southern Utah. It's right on the other side of Zion National Park.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, 5,000 people. It's, yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. Okay, I'm looking it up on Google Maps right now. Great. I just went to Zion. I just passed. Yeah, so.
Nice.
Cool.
It's a town you drive through, so you probably drove right through it.
For real. Yeah, I probably did. Isn't that, that's like territory for, I'm really into vultures now. So do you see a lot of, because that's where California condor, aren't there some over there? Or do you ever?
I do recall, yeah, there were some there. I don't have personal experience.
Damn it! Okay,
I'm sorry.
All right.
I'm so sorry.
And Patrick, when did you start doing stand-up? Where were you?
I did it when I came back here. When I was living in Arizona, I ended up working on a stand-up comedy tour called the Latin Comedy Jam.
Oh,
and
nice.
Yeah, I did video for them, and I ended up befriending a lot of the comics. And I at that point, I already knew I wanted to do stand-up. So when I finally got back to L.A., they hit me up, the comics on the tour that I befriended, and put me on a show pretty much right away.
Damn.
Yeah, that's how it started.
That's how it goes, man.
Yeah.
You got to put in the work some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. And so you just started touring right off the bat, huh?
Yeah, it took a couple years. It was a lot of working around town, and then those same comics that I befriended took me out first, and then from there it just kind of branched out. Like as I got friends in other states, that brought me back out.
So how do you like being on the road?
I prefer it, to be honest. I love doing comedy in LA, but I think you would say that most LA audiences are, a little tired of comedy, it feels like. So you spend the first minute of a set kind of winning them over.
Yeah.
Whereas people out of state, I've noticed, tend to only go to one or two comedy shows a year anyway. Mm-hmm. So they already want to have fun right off the bat. Like, so you don't have to win them over. They're yours to lose. Mm-hmm. So I like that. It's a different type of challenge and it's more fun.
Well, how do you feel now as a stand-up? Like, how do you, I mean, it's only been like 4 years.
I mean, I recognize that there's a lot more to go. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, I don't have that. I'm going to crush every single time confidence yet for sure. Yeah. I'm still very much in the putting in the work area of it. Yeah, that's where I'm at. And that was before COVID. Now I don't know.
Yeah. Same here. Now I'm just like, can I be on the late night? Can I be a late night writer?
Is there going to be late night soon?
Literally.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good segue into Craig Ferguson.
Oh, very professional. Oh, yeah. I love it.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. Because he had a late night show. Okay. But we should listen to the clip before we do that.
That's yes.
True.
So please, let's take a break here and listen to the Craig Ferguson set for, what was it? Just for Laughs?
Yes.
Yeah.
And a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
He was a maniacal English boss on Drew Carey. Now he's the huge star of the Late Late Show in the US, Craig Ferguson.
21 years ago, I started my career in this very building. And every time I come here, I think, you know, if it wasn't for you bastards, I could have been a fucking doctor by now. Because I came here and I was just innocent. I was a sheep herder in Scotland. I was out doing things with sheep. And then I came here and then, pow! Show business! I had to go and live in California. And may I say, I've gone fucking crazy by living there. I have! And I think what it is that if you live in Hollywood and you get any success at all, and I want to get a tiny little bit of success, any success you get a little more crazy. And then more success and more crazy and more success and more crazy until you reach the apex of success and crazy, shining like a beacon of lunacy throughout the world. Tom Cruise. I'm sorry, that is 12 foot of crazy and a 4 foot mad. He's nuts, man. I met him once. I touched him for luck. He chased me like 5 blocks. The hell happened to Tom? I used to love Tom. We all loved Tom. He was great when he was sliding in his underwear and you can't handle the truth and everything. Now he's gone batshit. He has. I saw him in this interview with Matt Lauer on the Today Show. You see that interview? I mean, Tom had a movie out, so he was talking about it, and then the conversation got on to Brooke Shields for some reason, who had a book out at that time, because Brooke, after the birth of her second child, had suffered from postpartum depression. And in order to get through it, she had taken antidepressant drugs. And Tom was furious about this. He was really angry. He was like, no, Matt! Matt! He was mad! He was like, Matt, Brooke shouldn't take antidepressant drugs for postpartum depression. And I'm thinking, Tom, you're a man talking about postpartum depression. Shh. If you're a man and the mother of your child is suffering from postpartum depression, here's how you treat it. Do what she says and get the fuck out of the house. But Tom, then it went on to all sorts of depression. You know, Tom was like, no, Matt. The plane. He was like, Matt. People shouldn't take antidepressant drugs for any kind of depression. None at all. And I'm thinking, what? What? He's going, no, Matt. These drugs. Matt. These drugs, they're just masking the symptoms of depression. And I'm thinking, yes. That's right. That's what you do with depression. You mask the symptoms. The symptoms of depression is depression. It's not a symptom of something else. It's not like you go, ooh, I feel really sad, and then your ass falls off. The symptoms of depression is depression.
You take away the symptoms of depression, hello, you're cured. But Tom was like, no, Matt, these drugs, they're just a crutch. These drugs are just a crutch. And I'm thinking, yes, they're a crutch. You don't walk up to a guy with one leg and say, hey, pal, that crutch is just a crutch. Throw it away. Hop, you bastard. That crutch is masking the symptoms of your one-leggedness. I have an idea. Actors should shut the fuck up about things they know nothing about. I mean, I know there's corruption in medicine. I know stuff goes on. People are people. But you know that in 90% of the cases, these drugs are prescribed by doctors. Not actors, doctors. Sounds the same, little bit different. Doctors go to college. Actors go to rehab.
Patrick, thanks for bringing this set to my attention.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Why Craig Ferguson?
Mainly because he's someone that I've always looked up to. He has a career trajectory that I would love for sure. We had similar starts. Like, he was super into punk rock music, and so was I when I was younger. I've played in punk rock bands and stuff like that. And then when I lived in Southern Utah, there, as you can imagine, there was not a lot to do. So I loved watching late night, and like Conan and Craig were always the ones that I watched, and Craig was always the one that I really grew attached to. And then even now, like, as a stand-up comedian, I really enjoy his philosophy on it, and like hearing him talk about how like he doesn't feel like he fits within the stand-up comedy world, which is kind of how I feel too. And then to see him now, like in his last special, he just announced that he's done. He's not going to do any more specials, and he's done with stand-up comedy. Even that feels cool, because it's like, oh, there is an end date to this. Like, we're all working for something. So just his encompassing career is why I like him so much.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You can get a feel from that, totally. Like, the fact that you can totally tell that he feels like a fish out of water, even within stand-up. I think,
yes. Yeah. And that's why I have, like, I was doing my own show before Corona hit, because, like, I definitely felt like that myself, where it's like, oh, I just want to do things my way and with the people that I like. Like, I don't know that I want to do like the club scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think even his persona as a late night host, I didn't grow up religiously watching those programs because I had a pretty strict bedtime a lot, but whenever I could watch them, I remember just really gravitating towards him also. And I'm not looking back on it. I do wonder if it's what you're saying, in that I think he speaks to us as like an everyman, you know, more than a lot of them do.
Yeah, definitely. And like he talks about that a lot, about like, you know, his every late night show has a sidekick, but his sidekick was a robot skeleton. Literally death personified. Like, it was very punk rock atmosphere. And and as you can tell from that clip, like, he just did not like Hollywood at all, which was always like my thing, because I love late night. And like, originally that's like, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to be a late night host. But then you realize like how much like Hollywood crap goes into having to do those shows, because like most of it is just to sell something, like sell a movie or whatever. And realizing like stand-up and sketch could be what I want, but without the Hollywood crap aspect of it.
Right.
Cool. And how are you doing that? By being on the road?
Yeah, exactly. Just working and doing, building my own thing. Like, my show was a really good example of doing that. And like, that was something that we wanted to do. We've talked about, because I do it with a friend of mine. His name is Aaron North. We co-produce. We talked about, because he has a little bit of fame outside of comedy. And we talked about being able to take that show on the road and just bring people that we like and our friends. And like, we don't have to worry about the other crap.
Sick. Very cool.
Yeah.
Damn, I hope that happens soon.
There were plans. We'll see what happens.
I must say, before we get into it, that I was a latecomer to Craig Ferguson's.
Oh.
Craig Ferguson's late night stuff. I came across Craig Ferguson, like, I think after his show ended, because I would watch. I was like, the YouTube algorithm recommended like clips where Craig Ferguson flirts with his guests.
Yes, yeah.
And I watched hours of that.
It's and a very good introduction.
And I realized, yeah, this guy's a good comic.
Yes.
So how do you feel about the opening joke?
I mean, from the get-go, it's hilarious to acknowledge where he's coming from. Like, this is like where I started my career, and now look what you've done to me. Like, look what Hollywood's done. It's making me crazy. I love all that opening.
Yeah, there's a sincerity there now that you mention like how much he dislikes it.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like, it's really truthful comedy, but it's hilarious.
I like these little throwaway lines about him being from Scotland and, like, you know, shearing sheep and then doing stuff with sheep. You know, he kind of lingers on that for a quick second.
Yes, yeah. And that he's very known for doing little jokes like that. I love those.
Yeah. What would you call those? Asides?
Yeah. Throwaways? Yeah, quick asides, yeah.
Yeah, he's really good at just throwing that, holding that beat, and then going back to his routine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes it feel like it's improvised, but you can tell it's written. Like, if you know what you're looking for, you can tell it's written. But the audience feels like they're watching something completely unique.
Yeah. Allie?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like, to me, that sheep herder line was a way of breaking up the exposition and kind of, and he, that was the first time he like laughed and he like grinned at the audience, very charming. And I think that
he
knew that he was not starting with a traditional like setup punchline, one-liner type thing. So I think that when this is kind of more of an exposition heavy, like an essay kind of set. And I think that what he does really well is he deploys those, the laugh right there at a right moment to kind of break it up for people. And then he does that as we're going to get through it later on, like the laughter, all these things are like ways to break it up. And I really think that's, it's very effective and it's quick. So it's not just like, it works as a tiny little joke, but it also works as a overall structural way to like keep the audience charmed by him.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause they can get lost in his over the top act out and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and you're right. With that, he kind of brings them back.
Yes, he vacillates between the over the top and like the very serious exposition. He very well.
Yes, 100% agree with that.
And then yeah, he's, you know, premise. He's gone crazy living in Hollywood, and with more success comes more crazy, and with more crazy comes more success, and so on and so forth.
And I like. For what I was going to say too, for me, like what I like about that little part right there was he says, and I want a little bit of success. Cause like, that's kind of how I feel too. It's just like, yes, I understand all of this is insane, but I kind of want it. Like mm-hmm. I do want some fame.
Yeah. You get a little bit of entry. You get to go in some spaces that you usually don't go to. It's nice to be able to say you're a paid regular at the Comedy Store, even if that's your whole life.
Right.
It's
something.
Yeah. I think that this moment when he's talking about the success and the crazy, or he's going back, like that's a, it's a really nice kind of crescendo. And it was at this moment where right as soon as he's doing the success and the crazy, I don't know if it's because the episode or not the episode, the set is from 2008. So my mind and my subconscious was kind of going back to that time. But right as he was saying that, my mind is like, and I've never seen this before. I was like, he's going to say Tom Cruise. I'm like, I saw it, the joke from a mile away. And I'm like, is it that that's on the nose and everyone was talking about it at that time? Or is it that he did such a good job kind of like subconsciously capturing Tom's energy and he transmitted that to me as an audience member before I even knew what was happening? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, cause then sure enough, he said Tom Cruise and then he ended up going on. And I think that if he had just done that, I think it was a combination, but I think it's mainly the second one. He was already in the character, quote unquote. But, I mean, if it was just like that one liner and he had capped it off as that, just like, oh, he mentioned the Tom Cruise and the Hollywood and then he moved on to another thing. If it was just that, I might have been like, okay, well, Tom Cruise joke, it's easy. But I think that at this time, that was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And I also think that he, you know, this became the focal point of his whole critique of all of this. And I big picture, I think it really, really worked. But that specific line, I think he's the funniest, you know, host ever. But I wasn't a huge fan of that at first, but now looking back on it, I appreciate it more. And I find that interesting sometimes when watching stand up. I don't know. Do you guys ever have similar?
Yeah, definitely. I actually agree with you on that too, because it did seem like this is going to be a very cheap, very easy joke to make. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you knew nothing about him, you know, and you're looking at this, and you know, a late night host, I'm going to make a joke about crazy Tom mm-hmm. Cruise. That feels like the laziest thing in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then now you analyze it back and you see the whole set and you understand, oh, he was taking the biggest icon for crazy mm-hmm. and then deconstructing very specific things. So mm-hmm. yeah, I definitely feel you where it's like, oh, I think this is going to lose me, but then yep. it doesn't.
Exactly.
It's and I was surprising.
Yeah. 100%. Good. So I'm not crazy.
Oh yeah. You're absolutely right. And you're always going to be right because of this podcast.
Yes, true. Because we have a podcast for this, that means everything we're saying is correct.
It's the perk of hosting. You were right.
I mean, I dare you to come up with your own. No, I actually don't want to better.
But after he said the 12, I think I started getting into it the 2 seconds after he said Tom Cruise, because then he said, I think it was I don't know if it was the way he said it, but he goes, 12 foot of crazy and a 4 foot man. And yes, it's a cheap joke, but it made me laugh. And I'm like, oh, but, and then the met him once, touch him once for good luck. Like, I'm like, I know these are short jokes and these are cheap shots, but also like tying into, I know he's Scottish and that's not, I know I kind of had like the Irish Scottish like kind of thing. And I'm like, it kind of started to tie together for me a little bit at that point.
Yeah. I feel like those specific jokes are like his personality charming you back to what he's about to do.
Yes.
Like, and almost like he knows that like, oh, people think I'm going to be lazy about this, so let me get you back on board.
Yes.
We'll see. He says that the Tom Cruise chased him for 5 blocks after that.
Yes. Which I could actually, I mean, that guy's fit, you know?
Yeah. And that was like another big thing, especially at that time, is how much running he was doing like in movies. Like,
oh, right.
That was
right around Mission Impossible 3, I want to say. And so, yeah, there's like that whole end of the movie is him running.
Oh my gosh. I'm just picturing him running and like laughing hysterically. Yeah. Chasing Craig Ferguson.
I like, since he's kind of a shorter guy, I like the idea that he likes to run so much because, you know, when you kind of kick off the ground several times, it gives the illusion of being taller.
Yes.
I've never thought about that.
Yeah, when I run, I'm like 6'1" right now.
Is that on your Tinder bio?
Yeah. When I'm in motion, I'm taller.
5'11", but 6 foot when I'm running.
He goes, you know, we used to love Tom. And then he talks about like the Matt Lauer interview.
Yes.
And he goes into some he's very like critical of Tom here about how Brooke Shields, you know, was depressed postpartum.
Yeah.
Postpartum. Mm-hmm. I hate the term partum because I'm like, is that Latin? Because it just sounds like you're trying to say Latin. So you're a part? Okay, so you're postpartum. Okay, well. I guess it's a word.
Sorry. That wasn't a joke. That was me just saying words.
I was processing what was happening.
Guys, let's take a moment to talk about postpartum depression. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
After watching this set and being a man, I'm just gonna shut up.
Yes, I like that. Yeah. I think Joe, did you have anything to say about the Matt Lauer intro or what were you?
Well, when he describes his whole situation of like, I think Tom sticking around and, or was it, he just had heard that Brooke went on to promote the show where she had to take those antidepressants. And it's very, I think, very sensitive. There's like, I felt uneasy. I was like, oh, what's going to happen?
Sure.
Even though like in stand-up, you know, all the time you hear uncomfortable material. Well, you know, you get used to it, and you know their topics that get handled very well. But I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the fact that I'm a dude.
Sure.
Hearing about postpartum that really put me on edge.
Well, I agree. I wonder, I was on edge too, and I'm asking, is it because we're in 2020, or is it something that he, but I think we've listened to, there are other jokes that are controversial that we don't get as nervous about. I don't know. But I kind of also felt that I was like, please don't say anything. Please don't say anything. Right. And I wonder, like, is that because he didn't get our trust yet, or because, and if he didn't, then why? Why did we feel uneasy? Or is it just because we're looking at it from the 2020 lens?
Yeah, I think all of that is accurate. All of those things play a part in this. I think that even me watch it, like looking for a clip to pick, I definitely got uneasy at that part. Like, oh, like, is this not appropriate anymore? Because you don't know, because that does happen all the time when you watch back old clips.
Yeah. And it's also funny because, I mean, I think we've also, I don't know, come a long ways on how we view Tom Cruise too. And maybe it's because I live in Los Angeles now and I work in this industry, but sure. Tom Cruise, like, yeah, he's like Looney Tunes and he's in all these ways, but especially in the post Me Too era, like Tom Cruise is universally known to be like a really kind man on set. And so yeah. It's like, I almost start to feel like these are cheap shots to Tom Cruise even, you know, and he's not wrong. Tom Cruise should not be blasting to America that they shouldn't take antidepressants. That doesn't mean that this shouldn't be there, but it's so funny how allegiances can change over sure. The course of the, you know,
so we here at the Dead Frog podcast don't have an official stance on Tom Cruise.
We here at Patrick Lopez Comedy have a good stance if he puts us in a Mission Impossible movie.
That's true.
Then we here, us three currently are actually groveling for a job.
Yes.
We are standing outside the Scientology building. We are recording this right now, looking up at that beautiful blue building. So anyway, that went through my mind. So I think maybe all of what we know now kind of influenced us and we were all a little bracing for it. But regardless of that, I felt that what I noticed with him is that because it was exposition heavy, he was still using his like laughter and then like the pan flute, you know, to kind of break it up. And even, and I think that even for you remove 2020 from the situation, even there, I think he knew that he was probably talking about stuff that wasn't talked about much. Like even talking about mental health in that way, like really, like that's kind of good on him. Like I don't really know how many, I don't think this was as talked about. So I think that he knew that, and that's, I'm wondering if he strategically was putting in that very specific pointed physical stuff to keep the audience with him once again.
Right, because I think that's where I was going to bring up what you had said about, like, had he won over our trust yet? And I don't think he had, and he knew that he didn't, because at this point in the set, we still think that he's talking about Tom Cruise as Tom Cruise, and not Tom Cruise as a vessel to talk about Hollywood in general.
Ah, yes.
So you pick the most iconic star. And I mean, even with the pamphlet stuff, I think he was doing all that stuff to keep people laughing, because if they thought about it for a second, they're going to be like, well, I like Tom Cruise, and they're going to lose the premise about what's about to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I think, Patrick, you should take the opportunity to tell Craig right now that you don't think he should retire. Just spend a little bit more time trying to get us to trust him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't think he should retire. I did see him when he toured LA last year, I think it was, right on the tour that he ended on. And it was as funny as it's ever been.
Yeah, he's funny. I would love to see him on tour. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Not anymore, but...
too bad. I also wrote down here, too, that like a lot of this stuff, starting at this point, feels evergreen. Like talking about... people shouldn't be talking about depression if you're not, you know, like a doctor.
Right.
Like that is very prevalent in 2020 about people that want to talk about doctor stuff, but they are not a doctor.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that completely.
I did have thoughts on that, but I can explore my thoughts more when we get to that part a little bit later, because I definitely want to keep talking about that. Yes. But because I agree with you, but also I had anyway.
There's more notes.
There's more. But yeah, back to this one. When he was I think that when he earned our trust, I is when he said that one, when he went shh, with the Brooke Shields, and I think that it was interesting that starting off with when he said the Scotland thing, and he did the grin to the laugh again with a flute, and then to me the shush was his punchline, and so it was just really cool to see all this like talk, not really any specific punchline, and the main laugh line happened right after he went shush, and he what did he say? Okay, if you're a man, you shouldn't be talking about postpartum. I think that's and that's when he shushed.
Yes,
That was cool.
And we're a couple minutes in at this point too.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you distinguish that? Because it seems like maybe he wins our confidence back, but it also, it does feel like pandering, given that the close proximity to him actually saying, what was it, like something like, right, ladies or something? I forgot. But right before he does the doctors, not actors joke, mm-hmm. he does appeal to the women in the audience.
Did I miss that? When did he say? I totally missed that.
Yeah, he said something about if you're a man, the way to deal with postpartum depression is just do whatever your wife.
You know what? That's true. I had some. I took pause at that joke too, and I was like, "Am I offended by that?" And I was like, "I don't know." I'm like, "I yes and no," because I think it's kind of frustrating when guys are like, "Just do what your wife says if you want a happy marriage." Right. I think that's oversimplifying and that's trite, and that's actually a way to excuse yourself from putting in the emotional intelligence that you have the full capacity to do. So I think there's a lot of that in it, but I don't know. Maybe I was just happy that he was like defending a woman about postpartum that I like excused it in my mind, or maybe So I think
I think that for me, that specific line was definitely where I felt the most like, oh, this is my 2020 lens looking back on it. Mm-hmm. Like I understand like why he said it and where it came from, but like I don't think he would make that same joke today.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't even get the vibe that he's. Again, I don't know him, so who knows how he is at home, but like...
Me either.
Right? What?
I do.
Okay.
I knew it.
Then here's my question to you. How is Craig Ferguson with his actual wife? I'm just kidding.
He loves her. I've seen many interviews with her.
It's about your question about if he's pandering, though. I don't know. I mean, it kind of goes back to, as a woman, like, is it that I'm happy because it's like such a low bar? I'm just happy when a guy is like on board with talking about postpartum and not making it weird. Is like, why does the bar have to be that low? Like, or was it actually, was it funny? Or I don't know. I still think it was a funny joke because, I laughed, but why did I laugh? Was the laugh because of relief that he said something and now we know where he stands and now we know the totality of what he was trying to say? Or was the laugh actually like, because breaking it down, what was he really saying at that point when we got the laugh? Up until that point, all he was saying was Tom Cruise was trying to judge Brooke Shields in an interview.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. By saying she didn't need medication, and then he's saying, "Don't talk about it if you don't know about it." Yeah. Basically, right.
Okay. So I guess that was part of his thesis, which was, "Don't talk about it because you don't know about it." Got it. But the pandering come in because Joe, would you say it's like he's trying to,
like, it's clear that he has that position, and I'm sure a lot of people agree with him in the audience, but he still has to verbalize it.
Right, he hasn't verbalized it yet. Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like he's cheating his way into getting that people on board with.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that premise specifically would probably be expanded upon in a longer set, and then he one-lined it and kept going.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a good way to look at it. I think at this moment we should reflect on the set and let's try to, okay, let's see, what is, he introduces the premise of what? Of being new to, like, from the perspective of someone, of an outsider, right? Yes. And he gets this he lets people, like, even he himself, someone who's in Hollywood, is speaking out about Hollywood.
Right.
And then he uses, you know, as you mentioned, Tom Cruise to talk about Hollywood as a whole. Or did you say not that?
That's how I view this. He took the biggest star of Hollywood and turned it into talking about Hollywood's issue as a whole.
Yeah. I also took this as an act of rebellion. If you think, I mean, this is 2008. He's 3 years into his gig as a person who does what? Interview celebrities. So to me, this whole set is a giant, like, water cool, like shooting the shit, talking work, you know, talking shop and like just like bitching about your work. Essentially, that's what I took this as. And I get it. I totally, you know, so this is very, actually, it's I'm surprised that it's kind of brave in of itself. Like if he was just Craig Ferguson and who just a comic who wasn't this host, if he didn't have that job, I would have been like, okay, well, this set is funny, but it's like, you know, anybody could say that. But because the context of this set being the fact that he's 3 years into a new gig and a very big platform, to me, this is kind of, I think that adds a bravery and kind of gives him an edge a little bit.
It's him reminding everybody, no, he's still a punk rocker.
Exactly.
That's what this is. Yeah.
Exactly.
Damn. Yep. That's it. I also like the idea you said, Ali, that he's bitching about his work, right? I do like that as his actual real album, last real album, where he just disses on his time doing Late Night, where just like he names names and everything, and it's him on the cover, like leaning against a wall with his arms crossed and in a jacket, and he's like, and then yeah, it's a big title. It says "Bitching About My Work."
Bitching. I would love that. I wanted to make one last connection. I just found this funny when I was looking him up. Apparently, he hosted in the same year as this festival. Was he a co-host or just a co-presenter? But he actually was with Brooke Shields. He and Brooke Shields, they presented an award for like best outstanding lead, female lead in a TV series or whatever in this same year. So I just thought that was kind of a funny connection. I'm like, did that happen before the stand-up and then they became friends? And he was like, you know what, Brooke, you were dissed by Tom Cruise. You're my friend. I'm going to defend you. You know, I just think that's kind of, you know.
That is interesting, yeah.
Just an interesting little color there. It almost seems like he's defending his friend here, you know? And like, he probably was pissed off, or I don't know, maybe they weren't friends, maybe they only met that one time, but I just thought that was a funny link.
Hey, that's a fun fanfic to write.
Hell yeah.
I'm already on it, don't worry.
I hear typing right now.
Yeah, it'll be on my website, guys, don't worry.
We'll like do one of those deep fakes with like the faces and do all of her movie within the ocean. What was that called? Blue Lagoon or whatever the hell it was.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then like deep fake both of them into like Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. deep fake them into like 500 Days of Summer.
Because if we're doing this, we're putting money into it.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this one?
I guess my final thought was back to the whole, you know, another thing that showed the time of it, and maybe it's just like when he said the thing about how people should stay in their lane, actors shouldn't talk about stuff. And I was like, he's right. But also, you know, it's so funny because now in 2020 with all the, you know, every actor being politically active and whatnot, it's just that joke also doesn't stand as much. Like it was all the rage to talk about like actors should only talk about acting. But now that's even changed.
Okay. Wait, guys, actually, we skipped over one of the best jokes,
which is
where he talks about how
Tom the crutch Cruise
says the crutch. Yeah,
yeah,
oh, yeah, great line. Yeah,
I think that's his best joke actually.
Oh, yeah, definitely his best joke.
Yeah, it is such a solid line.
Yeah, drugs are just a crutch. Yes.
I mean, that whole segment was the most solid part of his whole set because that is textbook you got your comedian, you know, gold star from that, where it's like, yay, you, comedian has to connect something back to depression or something about their past, like even if they don't explicitly say it. So I was like, all right, Craig Ferguson is just like the rest of us. You know, he's depressed. So that was...
Yeah, exactly. And like to be able to bring a very valid comparison to the one-legged guy, you don't tell him that he's on a crutch because of the one-leggedness or whatever that line was. Like, it's like, yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
That crutch is just matching the symptoms of your one-legged.
Yes. Yeah. That was the line. Perfect.
Yeah. He's so good. But I really like him a lot. It's so funny watching sets. And I was going to say it's an older set, but it's really not even that long ago. But, you know, I think it holds up. I do think this is an evergreen set. But, you know, there are things here and there that kind of make you be like, ah, like overall, I think it totally, you know, stands the test of time. But, you know, definitely at the beginning was funny, but you know, it kind of took a little bit for him to click in to 2020 audience's lens, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely think like a lot of that too was like he knew that he had goodwill being a late night host, so he could take his time.
Definitely. For sure. Patrick, any last words on this one?
No, I think we got everything I wanted to cover. I do feel like, yeah, a lot of it is very evergreen, and even the stuff that doesn't quite hold up, you understand why it's there. Like, you understand this is coming from a very, like, specific point of view, which I personally appreciate. Mm-hmm. And even though there are, like, yeah, specific time references, it still feels relevant today.
Yes. Yeah.
100%. 100%.
So, once again, we're joined here by Patrick Lopez. He will be at the Burbank COVID-y Festival.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
From August 9th to August 22nd. You can see more of the specifics as for like getting tickets and such on his website, patricklopezcomedy.com. Where can we find you on social media?
I am Patrick_Lopez on everything.
Okay, excellent. Is underscore one of your surnames? All right, forget it.
It's my middle name. Thank you.
It's your middle name.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if everything was a new app that I didn't hear about.
You know, at this point, it probably is. I don't know.
Oh, we should get that domain name, huh?
Everything.com.
Hey. Actually, right.
I think we've killed that frog. Also, shout out to Andy Lomeli, who's going to be joining you in the Burbank COVID-y Festival.
Woo!
One more time, just say it with me, guys. 1, 2, 3.
COVID.
All right, bye-bye.
We killed the frog. It's dead.